Tales from the Job, My Armored Guard Experience. A number of years ago, I landed a job with an armored car company as a guard and driver. The job itself was a combination of logistics, transportation, and security, which seemed to be perfectly suited to the type of work experience I had at the time. I maintained a Class 1 commercials license for years and had driven all sizes of variety of trucks. I also had a security services license for quite a while and worked part-time doing things like access control at special events, bar security, retail security. There was even a period in which I worked nights and evenings as a doorman at an office building on Vancouver's downtown east side. In any case, you might say I was a shoo-in for the job. Now, as this is a Krav Maga blog, I thought I'd impart a little personal insight and experience with respect to the actual security aspects of my job. I believe this is not only relevant to the other parts of security industry and law enforcement, but also to one's day-to-day life as it pertains to personal safety, situational awareness, and the resolution, avoidance of conflict situations. The latter part of that last point being of paramount importance when one is carrying around a loaded firearm. The job. For those unfamiliar with the world of armed security transport, bear in mind that the armed personnel being hired to move high-value items around is, in fact, an ages-old profession, one that predates the existence of firearms themselves. Where there is something worth selling, there has, and always will be, someone who will try to take it, sometimes by force. This is where people in my role come in. With all that in mind, of course, I was initially pretty nervous about getting into my line of work. This was in spite of the fact that the vast majority of security work I had done up until that point was, well, pretty hands-on. I had also trained in a number of different martial arts over the years and grew up in a fairly gritty part of East Vancouver back in the day and age where physical violence was what much more common, almost acceptable, part of our whole social vernacular. My concern, however, was that I only had limited experience with handguns themselves and had certainly never carried one around with me. Questions arose in my mind like, what happens if I'm receiving end of an organized robbery? What if someone gets their hands on my gun and tries to take it away from me? And how would I react to the pressures of being in an actual gunfight? What I learned in my training and from subsequent time on the job answered these questions and many more. For example, I learned that organized robberies are rare these days, and at least in part of the world where we live, if when they do happen, it is likely to go down fairly quickly, and as such, you may not even see it coming, and may not even have the time to react or draw your weapon. It will also likely be carried out by a group of professional thieves who, though they may be rough you up a little in process, aren't going to want to deal with murder charge and the associated problems that arise from that. You might get pistol whipped, but chances are you'll make it out alive. That being said, you still need to train and prepare for the possibility that thieves may try to kill you, and always be prepared to fight for your life or that of your partner if you have to. The complexity of carrying a sidearm. We did a lot of rigorous live fire shooting drills, and in the lead up to my employment, often while the instructor was yelling at us, of course, a big part of training I did for my job involved hands-on weapon retention drills and scenarios. I still run those drills as often as I can, on my own accord with or with my partner, which brings me to my next point. The likelihood that you'll have to fight for your life on the job increases significantly in a scenario where someone has closed the distance on you and is trying to pull your sidearm from the holster. This is a particularly dangerous situation where you must assume that the person is doing this intends to use your gun on you in a future robbery or murder, or even on a bunch of innocent bystanders. It's absolutely paramount that you don't let them get control of your weapon. This is one of the biggest pitfalls of carrying a loaded gun while working in what is usually crowded public areas. This is why you will often see armed guards walking around with their shooting hand resting on their speed loader magazine pouches at the front of their duty belt, with their forearm and elbow resting on the top of their grip of their gun. This is a relatively effective way of preventing easy access to the weapon without having to walk away with your hand on the grip itself. People tend to get nervous when they see you doing that. Observe and communicate. With that in mind, I still believe the best way of avoid being in either side of an aforementioned scenario in the first place really is through the use of effective observation and communication skills. Critical observation of people's behavior in conjunction with effective communication are the most useful aspects of security professionals' toolkit. In observing others around you, a little healthy paranoia is actually an asset in my line of work. Anything unusual taking place around you has to be at least considered as a potential threat or a ruse with which to distract you from a possible setup. A big part of addressing that involves directly communicating with anyone who approaches you before they have the chance to get in your personal space. To me, that means, hopefully, not less than 3 meters away, though at least 6 meters is preferable. The farther, the better in any case, though that, in many ways, is largely dependent on the environment. This also means always having a keen sense of what's going on in the environment around you at all times. If you got robbed, knocked out, or were relieved of your gun because you were on the phone or just weren't paying attention, you have critically failed the most basic level of your job. This could result in the untimely end of your life or someone else's. The verbal disarm. So how do you communicate with people in a way that will hopefully prevent them from gaining and exploiting a tactical advantage over you? This often involves giving polite tactical commands to people who get in your personal space while you're working. For example, if someone approaches me while I'm loading an ABM, I will often put my left non-shooting hand out and say, "That's close enough, is there something I can help you with?" Or, "Sir, ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you to take a few steps back and give us some room here." To a stranger who tries to start up a conversation with me, I'll often say, "I can't talk to you right now, I'm on the job." Or, "There isn't a single thing we need to discuss here, I'm going to have to ask you to move along and let us work." The thing to remember is that conversation they're starting with you could very well be a distraction tactic. The key in shutting down that is to make sure that none of what you are saying to the people presents any options for them otherwise, and though it may be a little rude, is also direct and not profane in any way. You must speak to them clear, concise fashion, and often with a loud voice and definitive resolve. In some ways, it is the art of being an asshole without actually being an asshole. Now, in having members of the public occasionally try to talk to me while on the job, there are certainly pre-indicators of violence that I am on the lookout for and do have to address directly. Having, as I said before, grown up when I did and where I did, I have experienced more than my share of violence at a personal level and work. One common thread I found in the lead-up to many violent events that took place was that when someone intended to do you harm, they would often make up a story involving you and subsequently try to ram that story down your throat beforehand. It could be something as simple as, "Hey, I saw you checking out my girl," or "Quit staring at me," or "My friend said you called him a insert thing." Sometimes it was more complicated or could be quite subtle. It was almost always categorically incorrect and simply made up for the purpose of justifying whatever they were about to inflict upon you. Unfortunately, the logical reaction of ignoring or denying the story that's being told to you will simply speed up the process of you ending up in a fight. I found the best way to avert that is to change the story or a subject of the story completely. A good example of this in relation to my work is this. I have on a number of occasions had people approach me while at work with a, "What would you do if I are allowed to do if someone tried to rob you?" sort of question. To me, this made-up story that involves me potentially becoming the victim of a crime and naturally raises a lot of red flags. This person could be testing the waters for a potential robbery, as it were. In these cases, I will try to make them the subject of my response with something to the effect, "You may want to entertain the possibility that it would end very badly for you," which usually makes them really uncomfortable. Or I will simply point out something about their personal appearance that I think they need to address immediately. I might respond with, "Hey, I think your fly is open." I might even say something to deflect, like, "Did you see that girl that just walked by?" Anything that changes the story and shifts their focus from me to something else. The trick there is not to let them get to the end of their story, because the ending involves you getting beaten up, robbed, raped, murdered, exploited, etc. Even if it's only a hypothetical, it doesn't end well for you, and, as I said, it may well be a pre-indicator of someone who is about to do something stupid. the use of potentially lethal force. Which brings me to my final point. What happens in the case of an actual violent engagement, and what are the rules by which different levels of forces are justified? In the absolute worst case scenario on the job, which is the use of deadly force on the part of an armed security person, there are three elements that need to play in to justify that. The subjects in the case must have shown a weapon, intent to use said weapon, a delivery system for the weapon. In other words, you have to be under attack and legitimately in fear of your life. But what does that mean exactly? Well, if, say, for example, someone grabs my carry-all bag full of cash from my hand in a crowded mall and then runs away with it, can I draw my gun and threaten to shoot them if they don't stop? The answer is no. If I draw on them, I'm being incredibly irresponsible and risk losing my job and authorization to carry. If I actually shoot them in that case, I am committing a crime and will likely be charged according to the outcome, murder, attempted murder, etc. If I even run after them, I'm putting lives at stake once again by risking losing control of my gun and ensuing melee. At the point they have fled the scene, they are a problem for the local police to deal with. As armed guards, we are strongly encouraged to disengage whenever possible. This is a luxury that the police themselves don't have for the most part. However, if I end up in a situation where a subject has approached me, ignored any tactical commands, I've hopefully had the chance to give them at this point and pulls a large knife from their pocket and proceeds to rush at me with it, that is the point when drawing and even using my gun might be justified. There will be a lot of factors to consider in that moment, including the presence of innocent bystanders, the terrain, environment, or the possibility of having engaged multiple subjects. The best case in that scenario is me having my service weapon out of my holster in the ready position and shouting tactical commands for the subject to drop the weapon and get on the ground, at which point the subject complies, stands down, and is likely held at gunpoint until the police arrive. The worst outcome, of course, is having to shoot the subject and deal with whatever ensues at that point. In light of what I've said here, it is my sincere hope that throughout my career, I never even have to draw my gun, much less use it. I haven't yet. In the case of what I do, a boring career is usually a long career. In the aftermath of even just a justified shooting, I would be taken off the job for an extended period of time, if not permanently. I might face some type of criminal or civil issues regarding, and yes, of course, would have yet another traumatic memory to add to the growing list in my head. Needless to say, there are a great deal of important and very critical decision-making that can take place at my job. Lives may actually hang in the balance. Conclusion. Beyond the possibility of a lethal encounter or more emotional scars, however, it's one of the better gigs I've had over the years. The pay is decent, the actual work itself is fairly easygoing, and it's kind of a hub for military law enforcement types with whom I often see eye to eye, which makes the work environment very positive. Honestly, there are a few groups of people I have trusted more than my current set of coworkers, but then what we do is predicated on in that many ways. The actual day-to-day reality of the gig is that people do stay out of the way for the most part, and the job can be uneventful to the point that many of us do become fairly complacent in our work. I try to avoid that by training as often as I can, and definitely encourage my coworkers to do the same. I hope this gives you all some insight into what I do. I would definitely recommend this kind of work to anyone in the security industry, those of us who are aspiring to careers in law enforcement or the military, or to anyone who just wants to challenge themselves to do something that requires a higher level of personal engagement in their work. Written by a UTKM student. If you would like to submit a story about your experience in security, law enforcement, or the military in relation to self-defense, violence, de-escalation, what you have learned and how you have handled it, please make submissions to info@urbantacticscanada.com, minimum 500 words. Published submissions will be rewarded with a 3-month free access to UTKMU. For training online, visit www.utkmu.com. If you're in the Metro Vancouver area, come and learn with us in person. Sign up at www.urbantacticskm.com.